You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting remotely for WFHB, this is Don Guerra.
And I'm Alex Dieterer. This is the WFHB local news for Monday, May 3rd, 2021.
Well, the American Rescue Plan is a huge deal. It's really significant for our community. It's exciting. It's important that the federal government has provided this support directly to communities, both the city and the county.
Later in the program, we have a few minutes with the mayor, a weekly segment where Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton answers questions on community issues. More coming up in our feature reports.
Also coming up in the next half hour, we have coverage on Bloomington's public zoning debate set to resume on Tuesday. More in today's headlines. But first, your local news brief.
From WFHB, this is the local news brief for Monday, May 3rd. I'm Catherine Patterson. COVID-19 cases are still high in Monroe County, with an average of 16 people per 100,000 testing positive per day. However, 29% of residents have gotten fully vaccinated, 3% lower than the national statistic. Although the CDC continues to encourage wearing masks and social distancing, they announced that fully vaccinated citizens after 2 weeks may gather in small groups without masks or social distancing. Yesterday afternoon, a U-Haul truck made its way into the side of the tattoo and piercing studio, Evil by the Needle, while people were inside. Bloomington Police Department officers on scene were continuing to gather information about the incident. The two people inside the building were pushed to the other side of the studio by the truck and rushed to the hospital with minor injuries. On Saturday, Bloomington's only LGBTQ-inclusive nightclub, The Back Door, opened back up after more than a year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Co-owner Smoove was reported to have applied for 5 loans to pay for utilities and keep the space open over the past year, as he, quote, was in favor of people over profits, end quote. About 70 people celebrated the grand reopening outside on the newly renovated patio. The Back Door plans to continue to require masks for the time being and slowly return back to business as usual. That's all for your local news brief. From WFHB, I'm Catherine Patterson.
Mayor John Hamilton announced 3 new positive COVID-19 cases among city employees at the April 30th coronavirus press conference. Monroe County Health Administrator Penny Caudill talked about an upcoming vaccination site at the Boys and Girls Club. She said the resources from the Bloomington Convention Center site would be going towards outreach programs to help eliminate barriers to receiving vaccines.
We have volunteers and staff who are going door to door this weekend to encourage people to come to that clinic to sign up so we can be prepared for a full time of vaccinations. And then I want to give a huge thank you to our community partners who are serving the Hispanic and Latinx community. Our goal is certainly to provide information, answer questions, reduce barriers like language. And we have an outreach clinic that is planned. We've got more communication that will be coming out on that as well.
Caudill said some local vaccine sites have been taking walk-ins. As well, Indiana University Vice President Kirk White confirmed that Assembly Hall is assembling walk-ins starting an hour after the site opens. The Boys and Girls Club pop-up vaccination site will be May 6th.
Governor Eric Holcomb filed a lawsuit against the Indiana General Assembly over a law that gives the state legislature more authority during a public health emergency. House Enrolled Act 1123 allows the Indiana General Assembly to convene for a special session if the governor declares an emergency. It also regulates how the state spends federal stimulus money. After its passage, Governor Holcomb vetoed the legislation. Then lawmakers overrode the governor's veto. According to the lawsuit, Holcomb says the ability to call a special session is given solely to the governor and the state constitution. The complaint says, quote, the General Assembly has impermissibly attempted to give itself the ability to call special sessions, thereby usurping a power given exclusively to the governor under Article 4 and 9 of the Indiana Constitution, end quote. On Friday, Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita moved for the court to strike the lawsuit, which Rokita calls unauthorized. Rokita said the law is constitutional and it leaves the governor's ability to call a special session untouched. He added, quote, "The Constitution does not authorize the judicial branch to resolve disagreements between the other branches over legal policy, even when those disagreements implicate constitutional disputes," end quote. The Attorney General declined the governor's request for outside legal counsel. Rokita also argued that the lawsuit should not be allowed to continue because lawmakers are technically still in session, after the General Assembly passed a law to extend the session from April 29th to November 15th in order to redraw congressional maps after the 2020 census. Drew Anderson, spokesperson for the Indiana Democratic Party, called the lawsuit a public civil war at the expense of Indiana taxpayers. Anderson said in a statement, quote, HB 1123 was forced through the Indiana General Assembly by the Republican supermajority with an extremely partisan agenda that serves no one except themselves, end quote. All in all, it's difficult to say when the constitutional dispute will be resolved. According to legal documents, Holcomb says the conflict must be resolved as soon as possible or the consequences could be severe. However, due to Rokita's motion to end the lawsuit and his denial of Holcomb's use of private lawyers, the issue may not be settled by the governor's lawsuit. However, another suit filed by John Whitaker, a retired attorney and former special counsel to Republican Governor Robert Orr, may pave a less complicated path for the constitutional conundrum to unfold.
The Monroe County Solid Waste Board of Directors held a joint meeting with the Citizens Advisory Committee to discuss Monroe County's solid waste management plan. At the April 29th meeting, Commissioner Joseph Winia presented a goal to add more unstaffed recycling and composting sites. Board member Tom McClassen said that composting drop-off bins have been successful, but unstaffed recycling sites have not.
It turns into a dumping ground, a catch-all for, you know, the philosophy at those facilities is not when in doubt, throw it out. It's when in doubt, put it in the recycle bin.
McClassen said the composting bins work in part because they belong to a subscription service. He said people who pay to use the Earthkeeper bins do so because they want to compost. Earthkeeper's COO Ryan Conway added that their network is only four sites away from being the largest in the country. The next Solid Waste District Board of Directors meeting is May 13th.
After hearing comments from community members on proposed changes to local zoning ordinance, Bloomington City Council closed its meeting last Wednesday with a motion to continue the debate in a special session this Tuesday at 6:30. In order to achieve long-term goals of affordable housing and sustainable development in the city, Bloomington's Planning Department recently changed the zoning map to expand the areas in which duplex, triplexes, and fourplexes can be built. Representing Bloomington's Planning Department, Development Services Manager Jackie Scanlon explained the reasoning behind these new updates.
We have a Bloomington housing study that was done after the last time this was brought forward to council, and something that was discussed in the comprehensive plan and then reinforced by that housing study, first by a regional housing study and then by a Bloomington specific housing study, is that we need more housing. The purpose of this petition is to expand living choice for households. We're trying to increase options where more people are able to live in areas that are easier to get places by foot, bike, or bus, to discourage sprawl. If we don't allow development in town, we can only continue to move out, increasing our car dependence, which is in direct opposition to many of our stated city goals, including many in the comprehensive plan.
The new zoning changes have caused a significant divide among members of the Bloomington community, and a handful of town citizens were able to share their opinions on the matter in the city council's open discussion. Proposed at the meeting was an amendment to local zoning ordinance that essentially reverses the proposed changes. Councilmember Rollo presented the proposed amendment and voiced his opposition to the zoning changes.
Students drive the rental market in Bloomington, and many will pay $600 to $1,000 per room to live in these converted homes. What we are doing here, allowing plexus, whether by permitted or conditional use, is giving a clear profit signal to the development community to purchase homes and convert them. The development community and the private equity firms who see investments such as this as highly lucrative will seize on this opportunity. Both the Upland Regional Housing Study and the 2020 Bloomington Housing Study indicate a lack of single-family homes for buyers. Permitting duplexes in R1 through R3 will only further reduce the supply of single-family homes and is therefore likely to increase the price of them.
After hearing an explanation of the current zoning ordinance as it exists today and first proposed amendment, the floor opened to comment from local community members. Although there was little common ground reached in this debate, Bloomington citizens voiced a wide range of opinions on the amendment. Speaking in opposition to the proposed amendment, one community member spoke out about the need for affordable housing solutions in the city.
I see duplexes and other plexes as a small incremental step in increasing density, as others have said, a small incremental step of building up more varied housing options for people like myself who are stuck in this middle. We need these missing middle options. I am not in a place where I'm even considering home ownership, while also not really wanting to live in giant apartment complexes, either downtown with students or on the edge of town, where my only option would be to drive to do everything in my life. We need this missing middle, which is provided by plexus. There has to be a compromise position. I absolutely share your concerns for outside developers. I don't want to see real estate speculation. I don't want to see housing prices continue to go up and up and up. So there has to be an option that isn't just simply no to duplexes, because that isn't a future that acknowledges the realities of the world that we live in. Because development is going to happen. That has been the history of human civilization ever since there have been cities. So the option is either to say, how can we work with that inevitability to make it affordable and equitable and sustainable, or to simply stand in the way and allow it to happen anyway, where the outside developers come in and take advantage of the situation as it stands today. So I ask you to vote no and allow duplexes by right in our city to provide the missing middle to people like me.
Others spoke out in favor of the amendment, voicing their support for the proposal.
Hi, my name is Anna Maria Mecca, and I want to express my dismay at the current zoning plan before you regarding plexus everywhere in Bloomington by right. Let me first begin by saying we all want to achieve the same goal of affordable housing in Bloomington, but I've heard various rationale for this upzoning, from sustainability to inclusion to density and so forth. The rationale seems to be a moving target. The market will not supply affordable housing, as many of you have heard. I believe this rushed adoption of the current national fad in zoning is an ill-conceived solution to Bloomington's problem.
The City Council, prioritizing community input and participation in the amendment process, have actively encouraged this discussion. Resuming Tuesday, the City Council will hear the remaining comments on Amendment 1 before making any official decision. Due to the volume of public comment on Amendment 1, City Council called an upcoming special session in order to accommodate the remaining speakers and to continue discussion. For Bloomington community members looking to stay updated on the issue or add their own input, Tuesday's City Council meeting is open to the public through Zoom.
Now it's time for A Few Minutes with the Mayor, a weekly segment where Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton answers questions on community issues. In today's segment, WFHB Assistant News Director Jay Jacobson poses questions to Mayor Hamilton on how the city plans to spend American Rescue Plan funds and how the city plans to annex 10,000 acres of Monroe County land. All that and more in today's edition of A Few Minutes with the Mayor.
Q Community members posted on our social media via Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, posing questions to Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton about current issues. Today, on A Few Minutes with the Mayor, Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton answers some of those questions. Discussion on the funds from the American Rescue Plan started last week. You had a special meeting with the city council and a bunch of other city staff. And obviously there's a lot of conversation and collaboration involved in where this money's going to go. But for you, what do you see as priorities for these ARP funds?
Well, the American Rescue Plan is a huge deal. It's really significant for our community. It's exciting. It's important that the federal government has provided this support directly to communities, both the city and the county. Personally, and the first thing I'll say is this does go to city council to appropriate all the money. So I propose things and then they give it the up or down. I think almost certainly we'll do very significant work on affordable housing, including people experiencing homelessness. It gives us a chance to invest in that locally, and I'm hoping to get state match for that. But the overall affordable housing issue, I think, will be a bucket that we'll see significant investment in. I think there'll be some money that we need to replace lost revenue. We had some really hard hits to the Parks Department, to the Streets and Roads Department, and some others, information technology, that got hit pretty hard that we may need to backstop a little bit. I think there'll be some real interest. I will support some real interest in economic and job recovery, helping make sure people can get back into the workplace. And then finally, for me, it's thinking about public infrastructure. I think we'll have a chance to invest in some paths and sidewalks and road improvements and mobility improvements, and maybe some energy efficiency and such. And I would just say, in all of these investments, to me, two really big filters, two big, really big kind of scoring points are, how do we help us make a more inclusive city? Like, how's it building economic, racial justice? And second, how do we advance climate responsibility and sustainability? So both of those are kind of overarching goals that I think we can move toward.
The city council members had a ton of suggestions and ideas, especially like ideas for affordable housing for the mm-hmm. ARP funds. Did any of those ideas sort of catch your fancy, I suppose?
Well, I was very pleased that quite a few council members explicitly jumped in and said, we want to see investments in affordable housing. I agree with that. And I think that's one of the signals that we're very likely to see that. There was a few who expressed an interest in a land trust. That is an entity that can make long-term permanent affordability easier to achieve and manage through time. I'm a big fan of that too. But I think, you know, there's a lot of dialogue still to go. That was just one evening and nine council members, and we have to kind of explore ideas, but I'm sure we will be doing things that support people experiencing homelessness. I'm highly confident about that. I'm highly confident we'll be doing things to support home ownership and other rental affordability, and the detail of how to do that and how much and what kind of package we'll be working on the next few weeks and months.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be maybe not a long process, but certainly a very thorough one. So
we will probably present one set of proposals in June to invest money this year, still in 2021. And then we fully expect that in the budget hearings, which kind of go from August through September and October, we'll be talking about how to invest funds in 2022. So at least over the next 6 months, I'd expect a lot of conversation about it.
Last week, you announced that Bloomington was going to be getting back on track with its the process of annexation. There's a list of frequently asked questions on the city's website. You can go to bloomington.in.gov/annex to look that stuff up. But for the listeners who you know may not know or are like me, where they heard about this once in 2017 and it hasn't really come up a lot since then, can you kind of give a quick overview of the annexation process?
So annexation is how cities grow their boundaries. And when Bloomington started, we were about six square blocks right around the current courthouse back in 1818.
And since then, hundreds of different times, the boundaries of the city have expanded to encompass the growing neighborhoods. We've been doing that for 185 years, but we actually stopped expanding our boundaries in 2004. The previous administration did not do any significant annexation, and we've now built up so that our boundaries, having been frozen for 17 years so far, and that we've really got a lot of highly developed neighborhoods that grew up right outside the city that in historical pattern really should be brought into the city. And annexation is the legal process by which you do that. It's done, again, throughout our history. It's how cities continue to grow as neighborhoods are built out and sewers extended and such things. But we have a little catching up to do because it's been such a long time since we did it. So we've proposed a significant annexation. And as you referenced, back in 2017, the state legislature now demonstrably illegally stopped our annexation with a special state law focused on Bloomington, and the Indiana Supreme Court just a few months ago agreed with us that was illegal and unconstitutional special legislation. So we're picking back up where we left off, and that means over the next 4 or 5 months, the city council will review the boundaries. We release a fiscal plan that kind of analyzes what the impact would be on thousands of parcels of land that would be added to the city. And the city finances and their finances and services like police and sanitation and parks and roads and all those things. And it's a very thorough process to let the city council vote on the new boundaries. And we expect that to be completed probably by September this year. Now, I'll note, even when the process is completed, it won't be effective for another 2.5 or so years to give time to plan and implement the city services to be provided in the new areas.
So in your video, in your update video, you say, quote, "Bloomington's long-term social and economic success is critical to the success of our entire region." Can you elaborate a little bit on that? Why is it so important that areas belong in city limits versus just being Monroe County areas?
Well, the first point I'm making is that Bloomington is an economic and social and cultural engine for our whole region, as a source of jobs, as a source of center of a region, of an economic region that's really important, and that we need a thriving city in the center of that region to help continue to drive high quality of life, to invest in the amenities that we like, to support the development of all the jobs and cultural activities and such. And so having a strong Bloomington is really important to the success of our whole region. Now, to have a strong Bloomington, through history, cities need to keep growing as their density increases, as they have neighborhoods that grow around them. If a city does not grow to expand those neighborhoods and include those neighborhoods into the city, you can end up with kind of an unhealthy dynamic of a core city that provides all the services and the parks and the roads and such, but you have a bunch of neighborhoods around it that don't formally contribute to it and aren't part of it, and you can have political dynamics. It's kind of what we saw in American cities in the last 50 or 70 years, where suburbanization and central cities not being able to include the larger populace was really a problem. Indianapolis is a great counterexample, where in the 60s, putting Unigov in place, where the whole county was made part of the city, they avoided some of the problems of a lot of other urban centers in the country. So it's just important for the city to thrive, and for the city to thrive, its boundaries need to keep changing to reflect who's living in and around the city of Bloomington.
Do you have questions for Mayor John Hamilton? Comment those questions on this week's post for a few minutes with the mayor to have your questions answered. From WFHB, I'm Jake Jacobson.
You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Catherine Patterson. Max Campbell, Cade Young, and Jake Jacobson, in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Jake Jacobson.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. Engineer and executive producer is Cade Young.
Stay tuned for With Good Reason, coming up next on WFHB.
Listening to the WFHB local news on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB local news volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB local news archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB local news. We are local, longer,